Hello, everyone. Welcome to Living the Breakthrough, T1D Stories, where we have conversations with people who break through the challenges of living with T1D to achieve whatever they want in life, both big and small. My name is Adrian Gonzalez, and I'm a board member with the Greater New England chapter of Breakthrough T1D. And my guest today is Gabe Corey, who is a member of my logistics leaders for T1D Cure Cycling team. He's also a senior technical product owner at E2Open, a leading supply chain software company that was one of the first sponsors of our logistics leaders team back in 2016 when we got started with that. And Gabe and I, we cycled 100 miles this past December at the Breakthrough T1D ride at Amelia Island, Florida. And when I saw him cross the finish line with a big smile on his face, I made a note to myself. I said, "Hey, I got to get Gabe living the breakthrough." And so here we are today. So Gabe, welcome to the program.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for having me. I'm absolutely honored to be here and thankful to be able to chat with you.
Yeah, no, this is great. I mean, obviously we're both wearing much warmer clothes than we were back in Florida back in December, although it was unseasonably cold there in Amelia Island back in December. So we were definitely cold there at that starting line, weren't we?
Yeah, it was chilly. It was not what you'd expect from Florida weather, but yeah, it was definitely cold.
That's right. And we both finished with smile on our faces, and we were part of a large fundraising effort, which is part of the celebration, part of the goal there. So let's get started. And let's get started with the question that we always get this program started with, and that is the beginning of your T1D story. I mean, when and how did you get diagnosed with type 1 diabetes? And, what do you remember about that day?
Yeah, so I was diagnosed at the age of 4, which I suppose really is to say I don't truly remember life without diabetes, and honestly don't remember too much about the actual day and the diagnosis process in general, to be honest. But there definitely are some things I can recall. So I guess really my story probably isn't too far off from other kids that might have been diagnosed around kind of the same time. But it started off with just kind of a bunch of strange symptoms that together didn't really mean much to my parents, at least initially. But they noticed over the span of probably the better part of a week that these symptoms would just kind of come and go. And I would be doing things like, asking for water, drinking excessively, going to the bathroom constantly, and even not really eating much. And I guess at the time, my parents didn't really think much of it, as my mom was actually pregnant with my younger brother. And I, for whatever reason, was just not stoked about having a younger brother at all. So kind of with that as context, they kind of saw some of these symptoms as maybe being behaviorally related to me just being a stubborn 4-year-old that didn't want to have a younger brother, just kind of, trying to take control of the situation for attention or whatever. But I can confidently tell you now, obviously, that was not the case. But either way, after a few days of kind of these symptoms being on and off, it really got to a point where I was getting just kind of really sick and even sick looking. I think near the end of all these, my mom kind of recalls me being super pale and just having lost a ton of weight, or I guess as much weight as a 4-year-old could lose, but it was very noticeable. And it got to a point where they wanted to get me checked out just to see if something was up. And they proceeded to take me to my primary care physician, who is also a type 1 diabetic, just to get checked out. And during that checkup, he thankfully suggested testing my blood sugar, and my parents were cool with it. So we pricked my finger, tested my blood sugar, and the meter just read high. And that was really kind of when we knew something serious was actually going on. So my doctor then proceeded to pre-admit me to the hospital, where I would then spend the rest of that week, or at least the next week or so, in the ICU. And when I arrived, they kind of did a similar thing where they tested my blood sugar, but this time they used one of the fancy kind of hospital grade blood glucose testers. But this time my blood sugar came back at 1,672,
Wow.
which even to this day just sounds absurd to even say or just try to think of. But typically, a diabetic's response to a high blood sugar is to take insulin to help bring it down. But turns out that when your blood sugar is that high, you have to resort to a lot of alternative means, as taking insulin could like end up being fatal with how rapidly it could drop your blood sugar from being that high up. So I'm a little fuzzy on how exactly they managed to bring me down, but I do remember it taking lots and lots of IVs and tubes. So many that they actually had to bandage up my arm that had all the IVs in it to prevent me from just pulling them out. And I very v vividly remember waking up probably the day after being admitted, just not knowing what was going on. And I think I asked my mom if my arm had been broken because of all the bandages. So my memory is a bit fuzzy of all the specifics of this whole process, but I think it was kind of at that point that my parents learned that I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And to me, I guess as a 4-year-old, those words really didn't mean much, but we spent the rest of the week just kind of learning about what it was, how to manage it and what my life, would look like moving forward. So yeah, let the record show that I was excited about having a little brother, but my pancreas may not have been as excited.
Wow, that's incredible. And I think that's I've heard stories where parents sometimes just attribute the symptoms to, well, it's flu season, it's the winter time, it's the, maybe the reason they're feeling sickly is just because of it's winter time or whatever the case might be. Or something else, and they delay, bringing their child to, to the doctor. But, it sounds like obviously with your blood glucose so high that, you were already pretty high there. So it's great that number one, your parents decided to bring you to the doctor, and number two, that your doctor, your pediatrician, happened to be a type one diabetic himself. So probably when you went in and your parents told him what the symptoms were, his red flags were already, prepped up. And then obviously you were able to receive the medical care that that you did, and were able to treat you appropriately based on your very high blood glucose. Now, was there any family history at all in your family with T1D that you know of?
No, yeah, no, that was kind of the weird part. We didn't really have any idea, obviously a lot of cases today, there really is no clear indication of what causes it to happen. But yeah, there's no history in our family, no, nothing aside from it just kind of being sprung on us like that. I think that really kind of tipped us off to anything. So it was kind of scary.
Yeah, well, certainly, we can. I can relate. My wife and I can relate with our own daughter. I mean, there was no history of it whatsoever. And similar to you, I mean, she was drinking nonstop. I mean, she was constantly thirsty and going to the bathroom a lot. And she started losing weight. And I mean, she played soccer. So this is one of those things where it kind of gets a little right. You can start making excuses for it. Well, she's very athletic. She's playing soccer. Probably that's why, she's growing because she was 11 at the time. These are all things you could just in your head, you say, oh yeah, it makes sense. She's working out a lot, burning a lot of calories. That's why she's, thin and thirsty,
Right.
but at some point you realize that, well, this is going beyond just the normal level of weight loss and normal level of thirst, and so forth. But that's great. So yeah, so you've lived with T1D for a long time now. I mean, and to the point, like you said at the beginning, you really don't remember what it was like beforehand. Now, of course, you've been, I'm sure, a loving, Big Brother ever since. But that
Yeah.
Big Brother did come, yeah, that little brother did come along. And when we first talked, you mentioned that, he also unfortunately got diagnosed with, T1D at an even younger age. Than you were, and your parents, became very involved with Breakthrough T1D or JDRF as it was, formerly known, and participating in Breakthrough T1D events became kind of like a family thing as a result. I mean, can you share a little bit about, that experience? I mean, what types of things or events did you participate in, and how was being involved in with Breakthrough T1D, in the community? Helpful to you and your family all these years.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Yeah, so we first heard of JDRF, or I guess now Breakthrough T1D, when I was initially diagnosed. I believe our educator was the one that kind of told us about JDRF and what they were doing. But we didn't really, I guess, get into really being super involved with what they were doing until after my brother's diagnosis, because me getting diabetes, then my mom having my younger brother, and then him getting diagnosed just shortly after that, it was all just a quick succession of events that really didn't give us the time to really sink our teeth into what they were doing and kind of reserve the time to get involved. So yeah, just shortly after his diagnosis is when we decided to really kind of jump in and see what was going on.
And he got
And I
diagnosed at what
think
age?
he was 18 months old. I'm sorry. Yeah,
18
he
months.
was
Okay.
yeah, just over a year old. And Yeah, it was kind of just around two in terms of the symptoms and just kind of getting our feet under us with getting control of his diabetes and everything. But yeah, I think we first ended up getting involved. Well, we got involved pretty quick after we had the time and were able to. I think my first memories were of the Walk to Cure Diabetes, which I believe is still held today, where our family, with now two young type 1 diabetic boys who were kind of hopelessly obsessed with the game Pokemon at the time, we named our team Poke Me Mom and participated for, oh gosh, I want to say like 13 years or so. But those events were really kind of make up my initial memories of being involved with the Breakthrough T1D community, so to speak. And I think it impacted me and my family in a way that really compelled us to get involved in any way possible with Breakthrough T1D and their efforts. Just kind of speaking from my experience as a kid, I suppose, being able to just meet and make friends with other kids that also had diabetes that weren't my brother, it was extremely special. And I think my parents kind of felt a similar way about meeting other parents and families going through similar struggles as us and just kind of being able to commiserate and share stories. So kind of, doing the walk for a few years and getting increasingly involved with that as much as we could. We started getting involved with things like the Children's Advocacy Program, where my brother and I effectively became kind of like spokes kids for our local T1D community, where we would do speeches kind of all over the place at local organizations, which eventually kind of turned into meeting with our state's representatives and senators and other local government officials, really just to kind of advocate for the funding of and supporting the legislature that would aid in the research efforts Breakthrough T1D was funding. So at the time as a kid, I really couldn't appreciate or comprehend the impact of this work, but it spans, I would say, the vast majority of my childhood, pretty much leading up to high school. And it felt like the early days of this advocacy work is what really kind of kicked off the snowball effect of us continuing to get even more and more involved as time went on. So we did a lot of speaking engagements, like speaking at like our school assemblies, Breakthrough T1D gala events, walk events, and even got to do things like be on locally syndicated talk shows and commercials. And it was really cool. And we were just, chosen to even participate in the 2004 Promise to Remember Me campaign, where my brother and I were selected as the two diabetic representatives for the state of Michigan to go to Washington, D.C. to once again meet up with our state's lawmakers just to kind of advocate and discuss the struggles of, what living with type 1 diabetes was like, which was just a super cool experience, even looking back on it today. But so while we're doing all this advocacy work, kind of at the same time, my mom ended up taking a few positions in places like the JDRF Outreach Program for families of the newly diagnosed. She served on the Board of Government Relations and was also the executive director of the West Michigan chapter for a number of years back when that existed. So I suppose my brothers and the rest of our family kind of just became her de facto like support team, I guess, that helped set up and tear down literally all these events that she helped run, from gala events, walks, all sorts of like grassroots outreach lunches and dinners, and even like the walk kickoff lunches that have had the remix of Walk This Way by Run DMC and Aerosmith just kind of perpetually echoing in my head even to this day. But even though all these things kind of took up an inordinate amount of time, that as kids we'd rather would have spent playing outside with our friends or playing sports, as opposed to spending hours in a car to travel across the state for a little engagement, I think it ultimately gave us all almost like a sense of sanity, I suppose, or maybe purpose, just to kind of meet new families who are dealing with the same things we were dealing with on a daily basis, and giving them a sense of belonging and understanding that they're not alone, while also getting them excited about what was all out there and the recent advancements and breakthroughs that the research was bringing us. So really, all this time, we were doing everything we could to support the research that was going on, just short of literally putting on lab coats ourselves, I suppose. But needless to say, JDRF and the Breakthrough T1D community as a whole have been and continue to be a massive part of our family, even to this day. So it's been awesome, and it's been a lot of fun things that we've been able to do with them.
Wow, it's often said that we often don't pick the charities pick up pick us choose us because all of a sudden whether it's you develop cancer or you develop T1D, then obviously now it has a even a deeper meaning for you, and it sounds like your family really embraced multiple aspects of Breakthrough T1D. Obviously, the community aspect, really to find support and comfort in others that are living with the challenges, both those that are living with it and the extended family that also have to deal with it. But then also the advocacy part of it, continuing to make sure that there's funding going towards research, which is so important for continuing to find getting us closer to a cure, which is the ultimate the ultimate goal. The walk is great. That's how we got started as well in our family. I think for a lot of folks with young kids, that's a an easy way to get started, an easy way to raise money. It's a fun activity, accessible to everyone. We'll talk about the ride, which is a kind of another step up. But again, there's so many avenues to get involved. It's not just about these athletic events, but it could just be, again, just participating in community events and things like that too. I think when I know for my daughter, speaking for her, and she was a guest on the program, I think the first time that she participated in a Breakthrough T1D event, it was really the first time where she said, I'm not the minority here. Everyone around me, the vast majority of people here are people that know what I'm going through, know what my life is like, because they're all living it too. And I think that's just a very invigorating, type of experience to be a part of. Now, I mean, so you were diagnosed at 4, your brother at 18 months. And a lot of people, when they first get diagnosed, especially years ago, and when they get diagnosed, at such a young age, they usually get started with, insulin injections to get, to manage their diabetes. But when we talked, you mentioned that you actually got started using an insulin pump, fairly quickly. After diagnosis, which I assume, was rare at the time for young children. I mean, how did that come about? And how has the way that you've managed your T1D changed over the years?
No, absolutely. It's like you said, a lot of folks start out on injections to administer insulin, then use blood glucose readers to poke their fingers to check their blood sugar like 6 times a day. And that was really no different for me. But yeah, for about the first 3 or 4 years, I think, of my life as a diabetic, I was on daily injections, which came with a very strict diet of what I could eat and when, throughout the day. And something that's kind of stuck with me throughout all those years that I can vividly recall not being able to have things like cake and ice cream at birthday parties, which absolutely gutted me as a kid, as I feel like it probably would with any kid, honestly. But that was something that like really bummed me out and stayed with me, throughout my time on injections. But just after that 3 to 4 years of that, this new thing called the insulin pump just kind of popped up, and we ended up bringing it to my endocrinologist at one of my checkup appointments. And I think he was extremely skeptical to put a little 8-year-old on it, considering how new it was at the time. But really, after some convincing from our diabetes educator, he gave in and allowed me to start it before my brother, since he was still practically a toddler. But after some weeks of just pumping saline instead of actual insulin to just kind of like prove to my doctor that I was capable of doing the same with actual insulin, I was eventually greenlit to fill that bad boy up with insulin for the first time. And from that point forward, was I was effectively free from the strict diet that I was on and was officially on an insulin pump full time. And that was kind of a really special day for me. My mom actually recalls us, seeing a rainbow on the drive home from the doctor's, where I made some sort of remark about God being glad about me getting on the pump, followed immediately by excitement about finally being able to have cake at a birthday parties and ice cream on a cone. That was a huge deal for me, and I was really, really excited about that. But it was, yeah, truly just a groundbreaking breakthrough that impacted not only me, but quite literally like everyone around me, including my family, my friends, even their parents, who might have been lucky enough to be responsible for me for any period of time. But shortly after getting on the pump, my brother, obviously soon too, was to follow. But getting him on the pump was a little bit of a greater challenge, since he's historically been more unpredictable, I guess, when it came to his diabetic health. So kind of mixing that with the fact that he was only 3 or 4 gave our doctor pretty much every reason to keep him on injections. But thankfully, again, our educator just kind of came in to save the day and championed him to our doctor, which allowed him to join the party with me in ditching injections. So that being said, I think it's safe to say that even to this day, That was one of the biggest breakthroughs I was fortunate enough to, be part of that completely flipped how I managed my diabetes on its head in the absolute best way possible, and is actually still how I administer insulin to myself today. And even though injections were out of the way, we still ended up having to poke our fingers about like 6 times a day to check our blood sugar. So we didn't really see many other advancements after the pump in the early 2000s, I would say until maybe like 2010 or so. I think that's around the time CGM started kind of coming into the picture and we're starting to be covered by insurance companies. So we jumped on that as soon as we possibly could. And the early versions of these CGMs or continuous glucose monitor systems not only cut down the finger poking from like 6 times a day to maybe like 2 or 3 at most, but it also allowed us just to kind of look at a device and see where our blood sugar was and where it was going so we could prepare for anything like a high or a low, which was super awesome. And this was unbelievably helpful as we started, getting older, getting involved in sports. But I wouldn't say it was until extremely recently in the past few years that possibly the biggest breakthrough has been made that allows our insulin pumps to effectively talk to these CGM systems to kind of give us like a sort of like a closed loop system to manage our blood sugar. So instead of having to look at one screen that gives me my blood sugar and manually, input it into my pump to administer a correction, my pump is now directly fed blood sugar readings from my CGM and adjusts accordingly, either by increasing or reducing my insulin basal rate to, keep me in range effectively at all times. And what's so insanely cool is that the newer CGM systems no longer even require the finger pokings to calibrate them. So as of, oh gosh, maybe like 3 years, I've been able to do completely away with finger pokes to check my blood sugar, which I know for a fact that younger Gabe would absolutely not believe. But this in conjunction with the integration of my CGM with my insulin pump has been huge for not only the day-to-day care, but all the physical activities I do regularly, like golfing, running, cycling. And it gives me just a big peace of mind, even while doing like day-to-day things like sleeping, which is huge. So needless to say, I think this is this and the introduction of the insulin pump have been kind of the greatest game changers, at least for me, that have empowered me to really fine-tune the health markers that we look at when I go to the doctor every time to just kind of check in on how things are going, which have been really amazing and extremely fortunate to be able to take part of.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look back, I mean, I look back, my daughter was diagnosed in 2011. And started out with the finger pricks and the injections. And in fact, the reason I started the logistics leaders for T1DQR cycling team was, I get up in the middle of the night, to test her blood sugar. And I would have, after a year or two, I would have the hardest time pricking her fingers because if you looked at the tips of her fingers, they were all calloused, as a parent, it just broke my heart, and then it was just even just frustrating because, you try not to turn on the light too much, you didn't want to wake her up. But I mean, here I am trying to, be able to just prick her finger to get a little drop of blood, and it wasn't even that easy. And again, fast forward to today, and she's on a similar system. I mean, she uses the Omnipod and the Dexcom CGM that talk to each other, so there's kind of this more closed loop system, and it's been, a game changer as well. So I think, some of these, technologies that have really come to market over the past, definitely 10, 15 years, again, driven by number one, the research that's gone into this, and number two, the advocacy to get insurance to cover it, for example. I mean, these have been, very important things that, organizations like Breakthrough T1D obviously help, on the funding side and the advocacy side, and everyone involved to make this happen. And we continuously see things in the pipeline that, gets us excited about, what's next for folks like you and my daughter and everyone, living with this. So let me let's talk about the bike ride then. I mean, that's like I mentioned, you're a member of the team. You were the first T1D member of our team. I mean, most of our team members do not have T1D, and some of them don't even have a connection to T1D. So it was awesome to have you on the team, and it was just another source of inspiration for all of us and purpose. And then my daughter joined next year, last year. So now the two of you are T1D representatives on the team. So we did the ride in Amelia Island, and I know you've done some other rides. So I guess some basic questions. I mean, what made you decide to join our logistics leaders team? What do you like most about these rides? And more importantly, I mean, what would you say to someone that's probably, hey, I've been doing the walk, but yeah, I'm kind of tempted by the ride, but for one reason or another, might be on the fence. So what would you say to them to?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, so I guess to start, my introduction and involvement with the ride program is kind of a wild story. But I guess to kind of start, my younger brother and my father were started participating in the ride program probably around, I want to say, like 2012 or so. I, on the other hand, at least at that time, wasn't ever really interested in joining them as I had moved away to attend college. Where honestly, anything outside of my studies and social life fell pretty far down on my list of priorities. But regardless of that, I knew, the fundraising they were doing, the miles they were riding, the team that they were traveling with to all these cool, destinations to ride once a year. But it never ever really piqued my interest. So kind of fast forward a few years after graduating college, I was on the hunt for my first, big boy job that wasn't just selling computers at Staples, where I literally drove past a sign on a building for a company called Blue Jay Solutions. And this was kind of the point in my job hunt where I had applied to literally hundreds of places and just couldn't get any bites. But after getting home and Googling the company name, I learned they were a logistics software company. And software was just happened to be the space that I really wanted to get into. So after learning all this, I kind of just submitted my application for an entry-level job on their software support team. And I got into the first round of interviews, and I mentioned that one night at the dinner table, and my dad mentioned that he actually rode with somebody on the Breakthrough T1D team that worked there as well, which was absolutely wild of a coincidence considering how tiny the company was, at least at that time. But my dad proceeded to mention my interview to this rider at their weekly team ride, where he then took it upon himself to vouch for me through the remainder of the interview process and actually met me on my first day. As I was walking out of the conference room from my HR orientation that it was held in, and never having ever met this man in my life, he introduced himself to me as Jim Kuhn, and from that point forward would swing by my desk what felt like nearly every single day, just inviting me to the weekly team ride practice or to the weekly team practice rides. And I brushed it off for what felt like a while, but after a couple weeks of asking, I kind of reluctantly attended a practice ride, which turned into two and then three. And it got to a point where I was starting to ride, somewhat regularly, where Jim mentioned, the work that you had done with Logistics Leaders corporate ride team, and it ultimately got us connected. So I guess really I owe my involvement with the Logistics Leaders ride team, the Breakthrough T1D ride program as a whole, and even my passion and love for the sport of cycling to Jim. His compassion and his willingness and selflessness with everything from riding with me on weekends to literally brewing beer and bread as thank you gifts to our coworkers who donated to our fundraising efforts. These are all, things that he did that I feel like I'll honestly never be able to thank him enough for. But with, a handful of team practice rides and less than probably a couple hundred miles under my belt, I rolled up to my first Breakthrough T1D ride in La Crosse, Wisconsin, back in 2018. And at the risk of sounding too dramatic, it ended up being one of the greatest experiences of my life. Just picking one thing that I like the most about it or the ride program in general would kind of be impossible for me. But at least as a type 1 diabetic, kind of like what Hannah mentioned in her, podcast, is that, it's the one weekend out of the year where you can actually be proud of being a diabetic. Like, I'd say it's almost celebrated. But in addition to that, the people there in general at these events are the highest quality, nicest, most supportive and loving people you'll ever meet as a rider or a supporter or a volunteer, just regardless of what brings you to the event or ties you to type 1 diabetes, if anything does at all. Just the energy and the support from the moment you check in to the final celebration dinner is a high that I literally ride on for weeks after I've crossed the finish line. And I really have no way to explain it. These ride weekend events have impacted me in ways I haven't yet been able to, find the words to articulate, but it's something that I, like many others, plan to be involved in until we have a cure. So really, to anyone who may be on the fence about participating or volunteering or really anything in between, let me be your gym. Even if you've never touched a bike or have any connection at all to type 1 diabetes, I strongly urge you to consider attending a practice ride for, your local chapter with a friend or a coworker or even by yourself. I know you'll be greeted by some amazingly supportive and caring people who will cheer you on no matter if you ride 1 or 100 miles. The Breakthrough T1D Ride Program and the events that they throw are truly something special, and they mean a lot to me personally. And I think it's something that everyone, should be able to experience at least once in their lifetime.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Gabe. And Jim was fantastic. I know he's retired from Blue Jay and now, E2 Open. And he was one of our first team members. So he was inaugural team member. There was only about five of us, I think, that very first year. And of course, we picked Death Valley to do that first year in 2016, which was a very, Death Valley is always a challenging ride, but that year was extra challenging. But he got through it, and there were some bumps in the road, let's just say. We'll keep it at that. But he was still a big supporter and advocate, and he came back and did some more rides after that as well. So Jim, and of course he brought you onto the team, so yet another reason to celebrate, Jim. And you're right. I mean, I think the for me, I know for my daughter, for I think for everybody that participates. I mean, the riding part is, particularly if you go to a nice destination. I mean, it's beautiful courses and routes and things like that. But it's really the experience of the community, the people you meet at the rest stops, people you meet while you're riding along. At the dinner beforehand, at the dinner afterwards, sharing stories and experiences. You can't put it into words. It's kind of those things you have to be there to truly experience. And I saw that today they announced the ride locations for 2025. And one of the new locations is Cape Cod, Massachusetts. So that's in my backyard. So I'll definitely be doing that. And they are bringing back the Santa Fe ride in August. So I might do that one again this year. So I think the other thing I want to say for folks that are listening and might be interested is that I think there's a misconception, because I often talk about doing 100 miles and you did the 100 miles, is that if you do these rides, you have to do 100 miles. And that is absolutely false. In fact, I think most people that do these rides do not do 100 miles. It's really any distance that is meaningful and within your capabilities. So if you want to go out there and do 5 miles, that's fine. You want to do 25 miles, you want to do a metric century, 60 something miles, that's fine too. Whatever the distance is meaningful for you, is the right distance. And I think everyone crosses the finish line with smiles and a medal and gets to celebrate the amount of fundraising that we do. So hopefully those of you listening will take a look at it and we'll consider doing one of the rides this year. Okay, well, so we're running out of time here, so I'm just going to get right to the last question, which is always the same question. And it's looking ahead to the future, which is the ultimate goal of what we're all here for, what Breakthrough T1D is all about, and that is to create a world without, T1D. So Gabe, what would a world without T1D mean to you?
Oh man. Oh gosh, that's such a big question. It would mean so much. It'd mean, no more, regular checkups with the doctor. No more fears of, passing this disease down to my future children. No more having to work the, part-time job of, dealing with insurance companies, medical equipment suppliers to get the things that I need. No more having to be on this perpetual tightrope act of keeping my blood sugar in range, and no more tubes. Like, don't get me wrong, I love my pump, but I feel like Pinocchio, and I can say I can, finally feel like a real boy without being tethered, to an insulin pump in my pocket. But in all seriousness, I personally feel like the impact would be even bigger for everyone else around me that are also fighting, this daily battle. Like my little brother, who unfortunately has experienced brushes with complications that I thankfully haven't. But while he's in a very similar boat to me in terms of, having access to the leading edge technology that keeps the daily management possible, it's people like him and all of the other children and adults and families that, from the stories and experiences that they've shared and I've been able to hear from them, have it, much harder than me in terms of, the day-to-day management. As I think we all know, diabetes doesn't take any days off. This is a 24/7, 365 days a year fight. And knowing there could be a world where, we can all go about living our best lives without T1D's foot on our necks, kind of brings me a profound sense of elation and optimism, that I think, really overshadows any of the immediate impacts that a cure would have on me, with how fortunate I am to have access to the tools to manage it. But I guess to answer the question, it would absolutely mean the world to me. It's truly amazing how far we've come just in the time that I've even had it. And if that's at all indicative of what's yet to come around the corner, I'm really optimistic that this is something we'll be able to look back on and reminisce about how we were able to, overcome it together.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think, if we as we look ahead, when you look at some of the breakthroughs that are being made in, with things like stem cell research and therapies, a lot of exciting developments taking place that, I've definitely seen an acceleration of progress over the past few years. With a lot of the things that Breakthrough T1D has done, some of the funding, fundraising that we've done, I think the we're always praying for that for that cure, and I know it's been a long time coming, and there have been people that have been waiting their entire lives for it, but I think one of the things that I know that just listening to doctors, listening to folks. There's a lot more optimism that we are truly turning the corner on some of these challenges and obstacles that have been in the way historically, that we're starting to make some progress there. So Gabe, again, thank you for taking the time to be with us today and sharing your story. I mean, you and your entire family really have been living the breakthrough for many years now. So thank you, and thank you to your family for all you. For all you do and continue to do, and I'm also hoping that spring arrives sooner rather than later, so we can shed these heavy clothes and get back out on our bikes and start training for these Breakthrough T1D rides coming up this year. So again, thank you, Gabe.
Of course. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute honor, and I can't thank you enough for having me and everything you do in general. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you. The pleasure's all mine.
No, the pleasure's all mine. And for those of you that are watching, if you've enjoyed this episode, share it with your family and friends. And if you're living the breakthrough with type 1 diabetes and you want to share your story, feel free to contact me, and maybe you can be the next guest on Living the Breakthrough. So thank you for watching.